All right, let me just close some things down so that I have better internet. All right. Well, okay, this month, two of you wrote me and said why you signed up for these monthly meetings. The first one was looking to enhance Zen attitude, worldview. And the second person said that they really just want specifically tips on what to do about fear. Then I received a great question from one of you, in that you, as a woman, you wanted to know how to react to fear. I'm like, well, this is perfect. We want to enhance our Zen attitude, worldview. And so I'm going to give a really big picture, kind of situations, lots of different situations on type of fear inducing situations. So it kind of encompasses everything that you guys are looking for, at least the people that have written me. What I'm going to do is, with our subject being tonight, wanting to know how to react to fear, I'm going to give you three scenarios then, and we're going to explore how to deal with each of them. How you can get the most out of this month's session is, whenever I give these scenarios, there'll actually be more than three, but it'll be under three categories. Imagine putting yourself in these situations and just ask yourself, how would I normally react to these situations, as we started discussing them, versus how you will react to them at the end of our hour together. The reason why we're doing this is because it helps you be prepared, right? For all sorts of scenarios that are fear-inducing. Like, for example, kayaking. Somebody took me kayaking when I was younger, threw me down a class four rapid. I didn't know how to roll, but I wound up taking a class afterwards and I learned how to do a roll in case somebody ever took me kayaking again, I would have that skill. Or like the martial artist training to fight needs to know not just how to fight, but also how to not get into a fight. Or what good does relationship therapy do if you never seek out a relationship in which to practice it? So, I mean, practice is great then, but today's talk is about implementing all that you've learned from me and that you've learned from life experiences on what to do about fearful situations or just fear in general. So back to the question, the person that wrote in, and keep in mind, every month you guys can write in and ask me questions about anything you want. But the person that wrote me in this month wanted to know how to react to fear. Now, I wasn't sure what she meant by this, so I'm covering all bases, namely three. The first two are internal experiences with fear that might have nothing to do with other people. The first one is just the reaction to everyday unease, fear that's just in your life for no reason that you can identify. It's just there just because. Two is react to choosing if to do something scary. And you actually make a choice knowing that you're going to introduce a lot more fear into your life. And then the third one is regarding how you react to something happening to you externally, where you didn't choose the fear, like getting a caught in a flash flood, or maybe other people projecting or dumping their fear on you by instilling trauma and the like, resulting in more fear. So going back to the first one is reacting to everyday unease. And this is something that has really been interesting for me in the last week because I gave a TED talk last Saturday. It's not live yet. It won't be live for a couple of weeks. But leading up to it, I was feeling a lot of fear. I mean, it's a big stage. It's an important stage. You don't want to mess it up. A lot riding on it, that it's has this huge, long reputation and history and all that, and it means something. And I thought, okay, fear, 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 gave the talk, did a great job. And I thought, okay, the next morning, I woke up and I actually didn't sleep very well. I thought I was going to sleep really, really well the night after I gave a great TED talk. And I didn't. I woke up just feeling absolute fear pickled in my belly, like all of that. And I was awake half the night. I'm like, I can't get a break, right? Because I've been dealing with a lot of fear in the last year and a half, as you guys know. You'd think that I'd at least sleep well after I did a good job with the TED Talk that I prepared, by the way, for 3 months for. And it really just illustrates in such a vibrant way that fear is just the deal in life. And so just talking more about everyday unease, fear, worry, anxiety, a lot of people call it that, the discomfort. Imagine that you're in the back seat of a car, but your ego is the one that's driving. And then fear is sitting next to the ego in the front seat. And you're just in the back, having these two people in the front seat, the front two seats, one of them driving, taking you wherever they want to take you. And the ego is comprised of your core wound, your false self, which many of you know what I'm talking about there, your conditioning, long-held beliefs, patterns, and this ego part of you is just driving in circles, trying to solve what it perceives to be unsolvable problems, kind of trying to find a destination that they're not even sure what it is, but know that it wants it, whatever it is. And so this, I almost call the ego, the self-concept is driving. And meanwhile, you're in the back seat, and there's a huge difference between your self-concept or ego and you. I mean, a huge difference. So self-concept versus self. And then the self-concept is being guided or goaded by fear, who's in the passenger seat, also in the front. So starting with this general unease, it's like you're sitting in the back seat there and who knows what they're doing, and it's mayhem and fear screaming and sometimes and just like constantly saying, watch out and all that. Who wants to be in the hot seat and talk about this in your own life? Just generalized fear that's in your life that seemingly has nothing to do with anything that you can identify. Who's in the mood for fear right now? Anybody willing to share?
I have a fear of interacting because I'm afraid people are going to find out that I'm not who they think I am.
Yeah, and you have to wonder where the heck did that come from? It comes from the ego. It's just, those two crazies up front. Go ahead.
It's like sharing how I felt. I was looking at the button where it says to speak, and I felt like it took me 60 seconds to hit the button to say, okay, I'm going to say this. Like, and for what? Nobody sees me. Nobody knows who I am, but this is my daily life all the time. I just don't know why.
You may be wondering why I don't make these Zoom calls video calls. It's because I find that people would prefer to be anonymous in a conversation about fear because nobody wants to expose themselves and let other people know that they struggle with this or that they have questions about this. I mean, most people just want to be in denial of it or they want to hide it. And so, first of all, thank you for being willing to out yourself. It's like, and I'm doing the same thing too. It's like I'm telling you that the night of my TED talk, when I should be relaxed and just like, ha, and finally I'm going to get a good night's sleep for the first time in 3 months, I didn't. I was tossing and turning in fear all night long, and I woke up just with a knot of anxiety in my stomach. And it's not tied to anything that we can identify. And what you're saying, I mean, you could probably talk to a therapist and figure out some childhood scenario that caused you to be this socially afraid. But it kind of just really doesn't even make sense, which is the why I like the analogy of this ego driving around and the self-concept. But it's not you, but it's just there, and the fear's there, and it's like you have no choice but to be a passenger in all this. So thank you for sharing that. And we're gonna explore this more in a little bit, but do you have anything else you want to say about it?
No, my only other thought that I want to share is I struggle with, does it really matter why I feel that, or should I just focus on what should I do when it does happen? And you don't have to answer that right now, but that's kind of the second part to my thought process through this. You know, do I have to know why, or does it really matter? Like you said, you woke up and you were, you know, you had a knot and all this, like, does it matter why? Will that help it solve it? Or do you just focus on figuring out what to do when you feel that way?
I have learned that it doesn't really matter why. I mean, it's interesting to dissect it, but the second you think you understand something about why fear is acting the way they're acting, it just changes anyway. And you're going to drive yourself nuts trying to figure it out. And you may think it's one thing and it winds up being something else entirely. And I think that it's wasted energy. I don't think that we need to identify, especially generalized fear that just seems to be there for a reason. You might be able to identify it. It might have to do with childhood. It might have to do with your zodiac sign. It might have to do with reincarnation. It might have to do with something that somebody said to you that when you were 2 years old and barely awake. I mean, I don't think it matters.
That helps.
I don't think it matters at all. And it also doesn't even matter what the emotion is, because oftentimes you just feel awful. And you're like, what is it that I'm feeling? Am I feeling sad? Am I feeling anger? Am I feeling fear? Am I feeling, what is it? There's been some scientific studies that show that it's very helpful to know what the emotion is. But I think when it comes to the fact that all the emotions are so conjoined and tied together, that if you start trying to identify what the emotion is specifically, again, you may think it's one thing and it's another. You may think that it's anger, but really it's fear, or it's fear and really it's anger. I think that it's a lot of wasted energy as well. And so I've started to just call it discomfort.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Okay. So the second scenario is, how do you react to fear when choosing to do something scary? Like, you've actually made a conscious choice to do something scary and the fear shows up. And maybe you could write in the chat room one thing in your life that you've chosen to do that's scary, either recently or in your life. Could be something big or something small. Just write that down now. And while you're writing these, you know, I want to simplify, because you have two choices with the fear once you decide to do something scary. And, you know, it could be even getting on a roller coaster. You can either resist the fear, in which case you're like the mother that decides to go on the roller coaster because her kids talk her into it, and she's just holding her head the whole time and she's upset because she's resisting the fear. Or you can embrace it. And if you resist the fear, it's torture. If you embrace the fear, it still sucks, but it's less uncomfortable. And I think in terms of, you know, maybe giving a scenario that's not just about something presumably fun, like a roller coaster, but maybe like launching a business. If you resist the fear while you're launching the business, it's going to be torture. And if you embrace the fear while launching a business, it might not even suck. It might actually be pretty amazing. So let me just look at the chat room here. Uh-oh. Yeah, here we go. Choosing to move back to Utah from San Diego. So moving is a big deal for people. Does anybody else want to write in the chat room something that they're choosing to do that's scary? Keep them coming. And I'll just bookmark that for a moment. So first one is generalized fear. The second is actually choosing to do something that's going to bring more fear into your life. And I found that choosing to do something that's scary is, of course, a lot easier to deal with the fear than if fear gets imposed on you, which leads us into the third scenario, which is reacting to other people projecting or dumping their fear on you. Perhaps if people do things to you that result in even more fear, like getting mugged or getting fired by your boss, getting abused, getting abandoned. If you don't choose the thing that's scary, you know, it happened to you, then that usually is a little bit more difficult to navigate the fear. And one thing that's also interesting about this one, as opposed to the first scenario, is that the fear is tied to something that you can clearly identify. Like, for example, a mugging, you know, there's a perpetrator. And when the reason why I put this under the category of people projecting or dumping their fear on you, if somebody mugs you, they probably have fear of not enough money, or there's some sort of fear that's driving them and makes that mugger feel justified. And it also might, if that mugger is feeling powerless and afraid, might make him feel or her feel more powerful by making their problem, and whether the problem being their fear or lack of money, now your problem. Rape is also something that happens to people. And we have heard that rape isn't about sex, it's about control. I would imagine, although I'm sure there's no studies done, but the rapist feel fear. And if they make you feel fear, it makes them feel powerful, you know, because they're the one that you know, they feel so powerless in their own lives because of their fear. And then the power that they gain by making you be afraid. And I had an experience of being picked up hitchhiking. I know, I don't need a lecture. In Alaska, and it was in my book, and it was by a man who was threatening to rape, murder, sodomize me, all of that. And I could tell, I didn't know this at the time consciously, but in retrospect, I can tell that he was all about instilling fear on me. That was all he was after. It wasn't about sex or any of that. And because I had a really strange relationship with fear, he didn't get that. So another form of rape is if the boss is, you know, your boss is just projecting a bunch of stuff on you and just trying to terrorize you with the possibility that you might lose your job, or you might or might not get the promotion. You know, this is another form of rape. Or anger, projection, like a stranger yelling at you or accusing you of something, even somebody that is not a stranger, or somebody aggressively preaching to you, which we're seeing a lot these days, about something that matters to them that they think should matter to you. And anger is, I mean, it's scary to be around. And it shows up, you know, as a powerful form of projection of fear. It's like they're not dealing with their fear, and so they're projecting it on you in the form of anger. It's usually associated with blame and that person not wanting to feel like a victim anymore, so they're making you one instead in order to get a power trip. So when we are having other people dump or project their fear on us, you know, how do you deal with that fear? And how do you deal with the fear of the perpetrator too, for that matter? So all of a sudden you have more fear and you're dealing with them, their fear. And I want to know who wants to talk about this. If somebody wants to unmute themselves and talk about a scenario in their life where somebody is instilling a lot more fear on them and it feels really unfair. And who wants to be in the hot seat now?
Fine. I feel a lot of fear given my current situation with my ex-wife, and I feel that I do exactly what you just described, try to force the fear back on her to deal with my fear.
Does it work? Does it gain you solutions? Does it make the relationship better? No. So it's, I mean, maybe there should be another scenario, like how do I not project my fear on other people? But I think that will come out as we continue to talk. Do you have anything else you want to say, Michael?
That's enough. That's all.
Okay. You know, I found a great quote, and it's very, really listen to the words of this quote. It's by, I don't even know how to pronounce his name, Horace de Balzac. Nothing is a greater impediment to being on good terms with others than being ill at ease with yourself. So what this is saying is that if you feel uncomfortable with your own fear, then you're going to throw it on other people. So this, you know, people that are uncomfortable or ill at ease with their own fear, they're the one that turn us into victims. This is the reason why I always say that your relationship with fear is the most important relationship of your life. This is like reason number 57, because if you can, instead of being ill at ease with your fear, actually learn how to be comfortable with your fear, then you're going to be on much better terms with other people. So I'll say this quote again. Nothing is a greater impediment to being on good terms with others than being ill at ease with yourself. All right, so backing up, big picture, here we are then, and I hate to do this to you guys because this kind of captures it all, and as I was thinking about what I was going to talk about tonight, I'm like, oh my God, this sounds so depressing, but trust me, it's going to get better. Whenever we're talking about fear and we're really looking at it honestly, at first it seems like, oh man, this sucks, but it's like we're holding a bowl with tons of fear already in it, sometimes choosing to, what the heck, add more. Then on top of that, people are adding more by dumping their bowl into yours, or even just life circumstances dumping a pile of more fear into your bowl when you least expect it. Like, this is what we're dealing with. And I like this analogy because it's you and your fear. You're not it, it's not you, but you have like this huge bowl and it's not like you can get rid of it. I mean, it's just fear everywhere. And so few people are dealing with their fear. And that's why I love that you guys are willing to deal with your fear and ask questions like, how do I react to it? You know, how do I react to it in myself? How do I react to it in other people? But it begs the question, the big picture, what do you do? How do you react to it? And in a moment, I'm going to separate you guys into groups of two. And some of you may be like, oh, geez, I really don't want to talk to somebody about my fear. I've been hiding and I don't want to be that vulnerable. Please, if you feel uncomfortable separating into groups of two, just at least say that and let the other person speak and take this time. And you can just be a support system for them. So the big picture, and this is what I want you to explore when you're talking with your partner, is what do you do about this big bowl of fear? Can you dump it out? Well, kind of. You know, we have this notion that we can release our fear or let it go, like a lot of spiritual teachers teach. But it's not like that. You guys heard me talk about this, where it's more like a food that needs to be eaten, digested, blood that's supposed to flow like energy. I'm kind of switching up analogies here, but it's your bowl. You can't dump it out. I wish we could, but we can't. It's yours. It's here to stay. And the second you dump it out, you know, fear is going to jump right back in and saying, screaming at you, saying, what the hell are you doing, asshole? Right? I'm here for you. So you can kind of dump it out. It's not so much dump it out, but process it. Like, you can talk to friends about your fear. You can talk to a therapist about your fear. You can learn how to dance with it through talking with me. You can digest it. You can burn it for energy or fuel. You can use it as a resource to make decisions. So it's not dumping it out, but it's something different, right? Can you hire somebody to take care of it for you? Kind of. You can hire somebody to, you know, set up security cameras at your house, and that will make it so that there's less fear in your bowl. You can get insurance, you know. I used to have my husband take care of the bumps in the night. He dealt with a lot of the fear for me. Like, oh my gosh, I'm scared. He's not. I'm like, well, go look into this, please. So you can hire somebody to take care of it for you, kind of. Can you choose to live a life with less fear? Absolutely, yes. But then what kind of life are you really living? You know, if you're spending your whole life trying to limit the amount of fear that winds up in your bowl, it can become pretty all consuming. So Amy's going to partner you guys up And here's what I want you to do. I want you to talk about your biggest fear-inducing situation in your life right now. And talk about the bowl of fear that you have. You know, is it just fear that's just there? Is it fear that people have dumped in your bowl? Is it fear that you've chosen to add to your bowl? So talk about your biggest fear-inducing situation. Talk about your bowl, what it looks like. And talk about what else or what can you do regarding fear or how you react to it. Is everybody clear about what we're doing? If not, either raise your hand or ask a question in the chat room.
Okay, we're ready to go.
All right, let's do it. All right. So anybody that wants to share, please unmute and tell me what you guys discussed.
Hi, this is Jeff. I just want to say the person I was talking to, I was just trying to finish up real quickly, and I was just trying to say that she, you know, whatever she's facing with her fear and her excitement, just trust herself, trust her intuition, be herself, and you know, whatever happens, you know, good or bad, whatever happens, just be yourself, and you won't regret being yourself. That's all I really wanted to say. Thank you.
Okay, and I like that. All right, I'm typing this in. So trust fear, trust intuition, and intuition comes from fear. Be yourself, fear and all. You won't ever regret being yourself. And yet at the same time, fear is not you. You are not fear. Just kind of like the one driving the car is not you and you're not it. So but I think that it's a more a matter of trusting even the process and trusting that this person, this entity is here to guide you. And I love also seeing these beings as being separate from you. And the bowl is being your bowl. And of course, you have it your whole life. I mean, I've used so many analogies, your child, your roommate, you know, your employee. But I really like what you said. I think that's great. And it's so hard, though, to do. You know, it's so hard to trust that this awful feeling in our bodies is something that we won't regret trusting or feeling. Anything else?
Yeah, we discussed sources of fear and how we feel about them. One example is if, you know, you've been in a bad auto accident, you'll probably be more fearful of driving. And I would put that in the category of rational fear because, you know, driving can be dangerous. Then there's, you know, irrational fears where you're just afraid of something and you don't really know why. And, you know, to kind of divide it back into those two things. But my discussion partner indicated a desire to try to, you know, overcome a fear of a specific thing happening, which was interesting. And then we discussed too, I wondered privately if a lot of fear is really a vestigial from our caveman days, where we were running away from dinosaurs, and when the dinosaur was gone, it went back down. But in modern society, we don't do that. And I don't know, my own relationship with fear is I rather resent it. It's limiting, and so embracing it is a concept I need to really focus on.
Yeah, and people who've worked with me for a while, you heard all the buzzwords there. Calling fear irrational, calling it something to overcome, that it's no longer necessary, that it's limiting. It's like going back to the analogies that I typically use, is seeing it as a person you know, you saying you're irrational to a person. Like, Jeff, are you married?
Yes.
Yeah. So imagine if you said to your wife, you're being irrational. How would she react?
I can tell you from experience, not well.
The word overcome is a funny one. Conquer and overcome, they're a little interchangeable. It's easier to understand this if you're trying to conquer your wife. You know, what kind of relationship do you have? If you're trying to overcome your wife, what kind of relationship do you have? And then you're like, hey, some of your behaviors, how you act, is just totally unnecessary. It's very critical. And if you're like, hey, you're limiting me, you're holding me back, what kind of relationship are you going to have with your wife?
Yeah, I mean, everybody has their affairs. She has a whole different set of life experiences than I have. We're a late in life second marriage. You can't, you know, everybody has to deal with their own fears their own way.
I'm just talking specifically about if fear is a person in your life, and if you talk to this person in your life this way, they would be pretty upset.
Oh, no, it's a terrible way to talk about.
Right. So probably the biggest thing that I help people do is change their language around fear. And so let me just turn this around a little bit. There is no such thing as an irrational fear. To fear, it's all rational. Our opinion of fear is that it's being irrational. And does that opinion serve us in any way? No, because we really don't have any control over fear. And people say, oh, there's good and bad fear, but really there's just fear. And if fear is acting in an irrational way, it's usually because we've been mistreating it. The second word, overcome fear. It suggests war, conquering, overcoming, letting it go, getting rid of it, fighting that mighty battle. You do not want to pick a fight with fear. You will lose. Saying that, geez, fear, you're no longer necessary, how that just can never serve us, ever. Like if we say, oh, sadness, you're not necessary. Anger, you're not necessary. Like, you know, who's to say what's necessary and what isn't? Like we're not experts on emotions and what should be here or what shouldn't be here. I would say that fear is 100% necessary. More happens in 20 minutes than used to happen in 20 years. And yes, we're not afraid of T-Rexes anymore or tigers, but I mean, there's no end in sight of things to be afraid of right now. They're just different. You know, we're no longer afraid of influenza or smallpox. We're afraid of COVID. But absolutely, and you say, well, some fear is no longer necessary, but fear doesn't have to be tied to anything. It's like, okay, I don't need to be afraid of tigers. Well, you're probably not, because there's no tiger in the room. So it's just that thinking is very, it doesn't get us anywhere. To suggest that fear is limiting, it definitely shows up as a view of fear as being something negative. And you don't want to see fear as something being negative, because it'll become something negative and you'll give it magical powers the more you have this criticism or opinion of fear. And so that's really what this is all about. This is completely out of the box. And the language that you're using is definitely common language, you know, that is out there in the world. 8 billion people minus 11 of us today use this language, but we don't use that language here because we're trying something new, something different. Does that make sense?
That's why I'm here.
All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to go back to our three different scenarios and answer the question of how do I react to fear? Does anybody have anything else they really want to say before we do that? All right. Scenario number one, generalized fear. I mentioned I just gave a talk and now it's over and it's still there. Different. Again, I can't identify. It's not linked to the TED Talk anymore. It doesn't, it's still probably linked if I really wanted to evaluate it to my divorce and the remodel and all sorts of things that I have to do and all that, living alone and not having any support system, that kind of thing, in my home. Like, I could dissect it, but it's just there and it's not really tied to anything that is easily identified. Or maybe somebody had a cancer scare or even had cancer, but now they've recovered and the cancer scare is over. Or even if life is great and yet you still feel what people call anxiety, because nobody wants to call it fear anymore. You know, now what do? The fear is still there. So put yourself in this scenario. And could it be lingering fear from the car accident, like was mentioned? Or could it be lingering fear from the cancer scare? Maybe, definitely, if you weren't in flow with it during the cancer scare or during the aftermath of the accident. I see people in skiing all the time. They have a really bad accident and they go skiing again and they are never the same. They're just absolutely in a state of terror to ski anything above their comfort zone. That's usually a sign of a kinked toes and that they didn't deal with their fear in a flowing way. Like what I just went through with my divorce and all that. I mean, I've been pickled in fear for a year and a half, and I probably will be a lot more, but it's starting to dissipate. Finally, it's appropriate to the life situation, especially if it was a big cancer scare or big accident. But like I mentioned also in the beginning, we don't really need to dissect why it's here. The fact is it's here, and it's the first tip is to accept that it's normal and natural. There's nothing wrong with you that you still feel fear. Life is scary. Even if you haven't gone through a cancer scare or a car accident or a divorce or what have you. So for just generalized fear, what I did the next morning after I woke up, or kind of didn't wake up because I never really slept after my TED Talk, was just, I'm like, God damn it, right? I was really hoping to get a good night's sleep and I was really hoping that I was going to feel better finally. So what I did was accept that it's normal and natural to feel fear. It's just part of life. And then the second part is tied with that, is that I allowed myself to be bummed out about it. It's like I cried. And I'm like, man, life is hard. Like, I thought I would feel better by now. It's been a year and a half since my husband left. It's been a year since my cats died. It's been a, you know, that it's like, but it's still here. So the second tip is to just allow yourself to cry or say life is hard for as long as it takes. And with that, there's a lot of acceptance. There's a lot of self-love. There's a lot of not beating yourself up that it's there. You know, it's just about kind of merging with it and going with the flow of it. And again, fear, after all, is meant to be digested like food, or to get energy from it like blood. You know, the blood provides its energy, and so you want to get it flowing if you want to get the energy of this fear. I think that's really important. So what I recommend is to also dance with it, dance with your fear, express it, or talk about it with a friend, get that energy flowing. And I go to something called ecstatic dance probably weekly. And I just find that part of me that just feels sad or feels stressed out or anxious or worry or fear or whatever, anger, even sadness, whatever you want to call it. It's all kind of conjoined. We'll just call it fear. And I just dance with it. And it's a self-love practice. And I let it express itself physically that way. And then the third hot tip for just generalized fear is search for moments of freedom. And you may have to create them. You may have to go find them and just leave the bowl behind for a moment, and really only for a moment. You have to do it in a really respectful way, because you don't want to be disrespectful to fear. Just say, hey, I'm going to go do this thing now. And when you do this, and it could be whatever it is that brings you joy. It's kind of like you put salt in a glass of water and stir it up and try to drink it. It's disgusting. But if you put salt in a lake, you stir it up, you've heard me give this analogy before. It's fine. It's like, go find ways to expand who you are. And ironically, how you expand who you are is what we're going to explore next in scenario number two, which is found by taking risks. It's like, the more you take risks, the more you expand who you are. You know, next thing you know, there is no learning or growth or expanding who you are without a willingness to feel fear. And it's very expensive for the body to manufacture fear. And if you expand your comfort zone, then the body doesn't have to manufacture fear while you're in your bigger comfort zone. What I'm saying is, the shortcut to this is, the only way to have less fear or anxiety is by taking risks and expanding who you are. That's the only, it's not by controlling it. It's not by getting rid of it. It's not by letting it go. It's just, the bigger you are, the less the salt really bothers you. Any questions about that? Scenario number one, generalized fear. And always do the four-step art of fear method. Acknowledge it's normal and natural to feel it. Step two, go find it in your body. Where is it? How strong is it? Step three, are you in resistance to it? And if so, it's only going to make it worse. And of course, we're back to the language of the conquering and overcoming, like, that's disrespectful to it. That's going to make it worse. Really get to know your resistance, try to get your resistance, honor your resistance, but try to get your resistance down to one or zero. And then the fourth step is just do, like I said, the dance with it, express it, talk about it with a friend, feel it, embrace it, be intimate with it, whatever works for you. So moving on to scenario number two, and our big question of how do we deal with fear? If you choose to do something scary, first of all, first hot tip is, be prudent and conscious of what you choose to do that's scary and when. After I retired from my ski career, I didn't do anything scary for 10 years because I needed to recover. My bowl was so full and I needed to just process it, digest it, dance with it, you know, let it, you know, flow, all of that. And then when my bowl was starting to get kind of empty again, I got bored, you know, because an empty bowl, no fear, you're bored out of your mind. And so just be conscious of what you choose and when. And, you know, it's interesting. I talked about roller coasters. Kids really like roller coasters, probably because they're excited by their fear. And adults, you know, the older we get, the more car accidents we've had, the more, you know, divorces or injuries or whatever. We're kind of over fear. You notice that? It's like, yeah, I'm not that into riding the roller coaster. But there's also another scenario going on where people that are really in a big fight with their fear, like people that have PTSD from war or what have you, they like to ride their motorcycles really, really fast. And a lot of that is because they feel like they have no control over their fear in their lives. They want to choose to do something scary, and they want to consciously choose to do the scary thing so that they have more control over their fear and it's showing up. So sometimes consciously choosing to do something really, really scary, even when you're pickled in fear, will give you a sense of control over your fear. It's a very interesting phenomenon. So back to what you choose and when, you know, what you might choose is to have a child or take on a bigger role at work, you know, go say yes to the promotion at work. Or like we said in the chat room, black water diving, website launch, moving from San Diego to Salt Lake City. So this is going to be uncomfortable and fear-inducing. So first, of course, with all of them, accept that it's normal and natural to feel it. Two, realize that it's a sign that you're expanding who you are. And three, tap into the energy of that fear to do a better job, to be more sharp and focused. And, you know, blackwater diving, like you want to have fear there to keep you sharp. The website launch, you know, the fear will make you kind of go over it again and again and again and do it right so that you're not, so you limit the amount of fear on the other side too. It's best, it's called panicking early. a move, it's like, okay, you know, you decide. And, you know, here's the funny thing. The second we have a little bit less fear in our bowl, we immediately choose to do something that is fear-inducing, I've noticed, just because we're used to an ambient level of energy. Some might call it stress. It's like, oh, I finally have a moment to breathe. I'm going to have another kid, or I'm going to launch a business. Like, just be aware of that, because you really want to make a conscious choice at the right time. And the move, it's like, okay, it's a conscious choice, but you want to do it at the right time. And it's also saying I'm in the mood for fear, because I know that it's going to expand who I am. It's going to give me a better chance of having the life that I want to live, that kind of thing. So tap into the energy of it to do a better job. Know that it's a sign that you're expanding who you are. And notice all these things. We only see fear as a positive. That's it. Nowhere in this do we see it as a negative. And that is probably the most important thing that you can do regarding fear, is to try as you might, because it is uncomfortable, see it as a positive always in your life. And in final, if it's something that you chose to do that is fear-inducing, remember that you chose this. And yes, it's sometimes like, I mean, there's a bunch of TV shows that are really popular, and they're popular for a reason, because they're super scary. Like The Guy That Eats the Cockroaches, or Fear Factor, or all those things. You know, these people have chosen to have this experience. This guy has chosen to eat the cockroach, and you may not enjoy it if you decide to do that, or he may not enjoy it, or whatever it is that you decide to do, blackwater diving and on, but because you chose to do it, at least it'll be interesting and you'll learn about yourself in the process, cockroaches and all. Any questions about scenario number two? So be careful what you choose, when you choose it. Only see it as a positive. At very least, it's just going to be interesting, and you'll learn a lot about yourself in the process. Scenario number three, more fear being dumped in your bowl. Now, the Zen story that I often share is that if you saw a guy on a bridge, and anybody that tries to cross the bridge is... anybody, he just grabs them and throws them in the water. And, you know, what do you do? And of course, the guy is fear, or even the guy that's instilling fear. I mean, there's a lot of analogies that could be made with the guy on the bridge, but let's turn this into a more real life scenario. Let's say you're sitting on the subway and a guy enters the subway with a knife. And I want to recraft our quote from before. Nothing feels better than being on good terms with your own fear. Michael, are you listening? So you can be on good terms with another's. So here comes this guy on the subway with a knife, and you're sitting there, and if you're on good terms with your own fear, you're going to be on pretty good terms with that person's fear who's holding the knife. And the question is, what would a Zen master do? And this actually happened. This actually happened in New York City, I believe. There was a Zen master on the subway. Guy came in with a knife and he started screaming at people. And here are my three hot tips for this moment. I'm not a Zen master, but I know what a Zen master would say, at least. First, have perspective. And stay in your own lane emotionally as best you can. And do this by seeing and realizing what you're dealing with. It's like you have your own fear in your bowl, and this person has their fear, and they're trying to dump it into your bowl and everybody else on the subway's bowl. Like, that's what's going on. You know? And the Zen master, he's sitting there, and first of all, he realized, like, okay, he's staying in his own lane emotionally. He's seeing and realizing what he's dealing with. It. Here's a guy that's really upset, has a lot of fear. looks angry, but he has a lot of fear, screaming at people. And what he did, step two, is empathize with the perpetrator. And also, of course, because the perpetrator has his fear, and of course, it's going to be scary for you too, also empathize with yourself. The definition of empathize is understand and share the feelings of another. And my guess is that Zen master in this situation had the thought like, wow, we're all afraid here. I'm afraid. This guy's afraid. All the people in the subway, we're all afraid here. Life is scary. And then the third step is, or hot tip, I guess, is try to connect accordingly then. You know, you could either give them money if it seems like that might be the right choice, if that's what the person is asking. When I was given a ride hitchhiking in Alaska, you know, how I acted accordingly is, I mean, he started screaming how he'd just gotten out of jail and that he was, you know, there's nothing to stop him from raping and sodomizing me and murdering me. The next words out of my mouth were, wow, you're right. You could do that. And being in prison must have been just really awful. And you're saying that it made you into a really compromised person. Tell me more. Like, what's going on with you? And that worked for me in AK, and it saved my life. And then I think about Michael with your wife. Like, if she's doing things out of fear, if you have a healthy relationship with fear, you have empathy for her fear, you have empathy for your fear, and you only respond with consideration and expressing that empathy. And it's like, if you encounter, another way of putting this is radical pain, the only way that is appropriate to respond to radical pain, AKA fear, is radical empathy or radical love. Love for them, love for your own fear, and on and on. Now, of course, this is easy to say, but harder to do. But practice, practice, practice. You know, that's why we get on these calls every month, is because we are learning to have a healthy, more considerate relationship with our own fear so that we can have empathy and healthy consideration for other people's fears. And they're monkeys throwing their shit at you. They're trying to dump their fear into your bowl. And next thing you know, you're not going to respond by being a monkey trying to throw their shit back or trying to dump your fear in their bowl either, or anger, or having it show up as anger. It's like, it's like the Zen master sitting there on the subway. You know, he goes through all this. He sees, he has a perspective. He has a deep practice. He has deep empathy for his own shadow, his own fear, and he has empathy for them. And what he said to that guy with the knife, he's like, come, sit down. And this was the right action in that situation. Different everywhere. Come here, sit down. And of course, his fear helped him react accordingly, because fear is really smart like that. And he said, tell me what's going on with you. Why are you carrying a knife? And within 5 minutes, this guy with a knife on the subway was crying in this Zen master's lap. So that's kind of what we're going for. And then, of course, if you hand them the money and they leave, then there's also the question of how do you deal with your fear after the fact so that you're not afraid of riding subways or not afraid of skiing again or not afraid of driving again. Well, you have to have the empathy for yourself then in your own fear and stay in your own lane with it. And practice, practice, practice. You know, the four steps, just coming to terms with your fear and that it is a self-love practice to love and feel your fear. Any questions about the third scenario? All right. Back to the analogy of learning martial arts as we conclude. We all know that the best martial artists, they might go their whole lives not necessarily ever having to fight someone, and that is actually preferable. They are actually trained to handle things without violence or without being defensive. Like, they're taught to be warriors. You know, that's probably the first thing that's taught. I don't know. I've never taken those kinds of classes, but I've heard. And the similar deal here is that we want to handle things gracefully, emotionally. And if you have your own grace around this bowl of fear, you'll see things clearly, and you'll have so many different choices. And if you find ways to deal with your own fear, that just ways that work for you, like for me, I go and express it. I cry when I feel it. I feel sorry for myself. I learn how to love myself. In learning how to love my fear, I've learned how to love myself. I'm making a real point as best I can, although sometimes not, you know, it doesn't work out, but I'm doing my best to not dump it on others, you know, be that monkey throwing shit like so many of us already do. And when you learn how to have a healthy, flowing, considerate, loving relationship with your bowl of fear, with your fear, you make the world a better place. You make your world a better place, and you make the world a better place. So that's why this work is so important. So I hope I answered the question on how to react to fear. And I think in you guys is if you're up for it, I don't know if you have like a temple or some sort of, I don't know, mantle where you put pictures of your family or what have you, but put a bowl on this mantle at home and put things in there that remind you of your fear. Maybe write down things that scare you or things that have traumatized you in the past or recent, or maybe put in the hardware that came out of your knee from your knee surgery from your last accident while skiing. Put questions in it or anything that reminds you of your fear. Put it in that bowl. Recognize that it's not you and you're not it, you know, but it's your fear and it's your life experiences. And it's like the richness of life's pageant includes things that are scary. And some of the best things in life include fear, of course. And then notice how you react to the things in the bowl. Can you learn how to acknowledge the things in the bowl? Be honest with yourself about what's in the bowl. Be honest with yourself about the emotions that come from the things in your bowl. Can you have a also ritualized relationship with it, including like we bow to Buddhas, we bow to, you know, if you're religious, to gods or what have you. If you're in a yoga class, you bow to each other. Like, can you start to learn how to bow to your fear? And every time you walk by that bowl, just bow to it. And notice how that's going to gain you interesting insights. That's it.
Thank you.